The Garden City Telegram, on the eve of the trial's start, printed the following editorial. Some may think the eyes of the entire nation are on Garden City during this sensational murder trial, but they are not. Even 100 miles west of here in Colorado, few persons are even acquainted with the case, other than just remembering some members of a prominent family were slain. This is a sad commentary on the state of crime in our nation. Since the 4 members of the Clutter family were killed last fall, several other such multiple murders have occurred in various parts of the country. Just during the few days leading up to this trial, at least 3 mass murder cases broke into the headlines. As a result, this crime and trial are just one of many such cases people have read about and forgotten. Although the eyes of the nation were not upon them, the demeanor of the event's main participants, from the court recorder to the judge himself, was markedly self-aware on the morning of the court's first convening. All 4 of the lawyers sported new suits. The new shoes of the big-footed county attorney creaked and squealed with every step. Hickok, too, was sharply dressed in clothes provided by his parents. Trim blue serge trousers, a white shirt, a narrow dark blue tie. Only Perry Smith, who owned neither jacket nor tie, seemed sartorially misplaced. Wearing an open-necked shirt, borrowed from Mr. Meyer, and blue jeans rolled up at the cuffs, he looked as lonely and inappropriate as a seagull in a wheat field. The courtroom, an unpretentious chamber situated on the 3rd floor of the Finney County Courthouse, has dull white walls and furnishings of darkly varnished wood. The spectator benches can seat perhaps 160 persons. On Tuesday morning, March 22nd, the benches were occupied exclusively by the all-male veneri of Finney County residents from which a jury was to be selected. Not many of the summoned citizenry seemed anxious to serve. One potential juror, in conversation with another, said, "They can't use me. I can't hear well enough." To which his friend, after a bit of sly reflection, replied, "Come to think of it, my hearing's not too good either." And it was generally thought that the choosing of the jury would take several days. As it turned out, the process was completed within 4 hours. Moreover, the jury, including 2 alternative members, was extracted from the first 44 candidates. 7 were rejected on peremptory challenge by the defense, and 3 were excused at the request of the prosecution. Another 20 won dismissal either because they opposed capital punishment or because they admitted to having already formed a firm opinion regarding the guilt of the defendants. The 14 men ultimately elected consisted of 6 farmers, a pharmacist, a nursery manager, an airport employee, a well driller, 2 salesmen, a machinist, and the manager of Ray's bowling alley. They were all family men. Several had 5 children or more, and were seriously affiliated with one or another of the local churches. During the voir dire examination, 4 of them told the court that they had been personally, though not intimately, acquainted with Mr. Clutter. But upon further questioning, each said he did not feel this circumstance would hinder his ability to reach an impartial verdict. The airport employee, a middle-aged man named N.L. Dunnan, said, when asked his opinion of capital punishment, "Ordinarily I'm against it. But in this case, no." A declaration which, to some who heard it, seemed clearly indicative of prejudice. Dunnan was nevertheless accepted as a juror. The defendants were inattentive observers of the voir dire proceedings. The previous day, Dr. Jones, the psychiatrist who had volunteered to examine them, had interviewed them separately for approximately 2 hours. At the end of the interviews, he had suggested that they each write for him an autobiographical statement, and it was the act of composing these statements that occupied the accused throughout the hours spent assembling a jury.